Hello, I'm your host, Leonard Duncan. Welcome to a new episode of ATV Talk and Motorsports Podcast. Please join us every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We bring you interviews with industry professionals, live events, live news about the motorsports industry in every episode. Enjoy the show. Whether we are out riding with our friends and family or racing in extreme environments, we all need good tires. That's why I recommend GBC Power Sports Tires, a division of Greenball Corp. Their products, which include XC Master, Mini Master, and Groundbuster 3, are what leading professionals in the ATV-UTV industry are using. You can get your tires at greenballtires.com or find them on Instagram as GBC Tires for further inquiry. Are you looking for the best suspension technology for your sport ATV? Look no further than Elka Suspension, the industry leader in sport ATV suspension technology. With championship wins in prestigious events such as the Dakar Rally, SCORE, Best in the Desert, ATV MX, Cross Country, and Works, Elka Suspension has established itself as the go-to choice for athletes and enthusiasts alike. But they don't just stop at ATVs. They're constantly expanding into new markets, including UTVs, trucks, SUVs, pit bikes, snowmobiles, and more. Their commitment to innovation and quality means they're always looking to improve and adapt so you can enjoy a smooth ride wherever you go. Want to learn more about what Elka Suspension can do for you? Visit their website at elkasuspension.com. or give them a call at 450-655-4855. They will always be happy to answer your questions and help you find the perfect suspension solution for your needs. Bruce Allman, welcome to ATV Talk. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and tell us all about what it was like to ride the famous ATC 200X in the cross country series.
Well, thank you for having me on. Just looking forward to this. And let's talk about what we did way back then.
The 200X was my first race machine on a three-wheeler, and I love them. I think they're awesome. What was it like in that environment back there?
Oh, the 200X is a great three-wheeler. I had gotten one when I was 14 or 15. We decided to go racing, run some GNCC. It was just a really good machine for out there. Didn't have a lot of work done to it. It was mainly stock, and we had a pipe and, you know, those types of things. But it was a very reliable bike to race in the GNCC, to run any type of the cross-country stuff. And it did well, you know, maybe not as much power as the 350X that we were racing against at times, but still a good bike.
So they ran the 200s and the 350s in the same class?
Not normally, but we were out there at the same time, of course. So, yeah, they showed their power on some of the big hills when they got beside you.
How was the tire size? What tire sizes did you guys run? And did you guys do any motor mods?
On our 200X, we didn't do too much to it. We just had an overbore and a mild cam. So we had a pipe. Tires, I ran the 22s for a while, but really we went back down to a 20-inch tire, and that worked much better for the handling-wise and not bouncing around as much. But the 20s worked real well, and that's what I'd like to run on it. And 18s were just too low, too low for, you know, for any of the rocky conditions.
So did you try to run 18s in the cross country?
No, I didn't, but I had taken some advice from some other guys that said, you know, they definitely wouldn't work.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I never tried to run 18s, but I took the advice of some of the guys that had a little bit more experience at the time, and they said, you know, you had to stick with a 20 or a 22.
Right. I would say that for that environment, that would be it. How did the 200 do in the mud?
The 200 didn't do bad in the mud. has enough, that little four stroke has enough power to get you through that. I didn't really have any really major problems with it in the mud. As long as you get some traction, depending on what tire you're running, you could go.
Do you get to watch much of the four stroke stuff as of today? Do you get to watch much of the GNCC stuff now? Are you involved?
I think I got what you said. I haven't watched much of the newer stuff. I've seen some clips on the internet. I haven't been to a GNCC in a long time, actually, unfortunately.
And you rode from 88 to, you said 91, or was it 93?
About 93, 94 is when I started getting out of the out of racing. So, yeah, about 88 to 94.
And your 88 season was on the 200X. And then how did they put it to you that you had to switch to a four-wheeler?
I just remember it was mid-season. I guess they announced it at one of the local races. It said the AMA was going to drop the sanctioning of three-wheelers, and we wouldn't be able to race them in the 89 season. So then we were all scrambling to try to figure out what we were going to do. The decision having made if we were going to go to a quad, what quad to go to. I'll be honest, we looked at the 3x4 in the Astro kits, ordered catalogs and talked to some people about them just to see if it was a viable option. We had a lot of money wrapped up in our race three-wheelers and, you know, couldn't use it anymore. So we were wondering if it was an option. We didn't go that way. And it had to make a decision to go with 250X, a Blaster, Quad Sport. And it was a lot of discussions and deciding what to do.
Did you have a team concept or a team group that you worked with at the time?
At that time, not as much. I was good friends with Bob Klein, and him and I talked about a lot of it, and he was good friends with my parents. So we talked about it, and then we visited some dealerships and talked to some of the guys at the track that were already racing those bikes and decided to go with the Honda 250X. That was our decision.
And what mods did you guys make to it?
Right away, it's funny, right away, everybody switched to them, pretty much ran stock bikes the first couple of races. We threw a pipe on it, you know, filter, and, you know, someone eventually put a cam in, and then someone eventually put a high compression piston in, and then it started getting a little crazy. But at first, we were just running stock bikes and trying to figure them out. Tire change was a big thing, skid plate change, and a pipe to start out with. There was probably, there was a bunch of it that switched over that year. Because the 87 250X was a leftover model, but they were readily available and a little bit cheaper than buying a new unit at the time.
Wasn't the 87 better? A really good model? Because if I remember correctly, there was a lot of them, and they were super durable and just a good quality machine.
One of my favorite quads. 87 was a great quad. Still have it. it was a good quad to race, and it was very reliable.
That's great that you still have it.
Yeah, well, I had a couple of them over the years. I still have one and maybe another one and a bunch of pieces. And my third one, one of my best friends has it, so I know where it's at. It's not that far from here.
Do you get to go out and ride much?
Unfortunately, not as much as I'd like to.
Right. None of us gets to ride as much as we'd like to. When you transitioned to the 250X, did you run the 23-22s, or did you stay with the 21-20s as far as the tires? And what tire did you run back then?
We pretty much stayed. We were in stock tires for a little bit and switched out the rears. We went to 20s in the rear, ran stock size front, We ran the Ozu Pro Comps. That was the tire that everybody ran back then. It was the most durable tire, and it was readily available from Honda. And it was one of the first 4-ply tires that could handle the GNC circuit. And that was before hole shots. That was before any of the other tires that came out. And they weren't horribly priced, and they worked well.
Did you race the Blackwater?
I raced the Blackwater 4 or 5 times. I'd have to double check on that. I think it was 5, 4 times.
Blackwater?
Blackwater was extremely interesting event, completely different than every other race in the series.
Can you expand on interesting?
Well, Blackwater was a party that had a race somewhere in the weekend, is what it was. There were more people that came there to party than there was that came to race.
And how did that affect you?
It didn't bother us. We were there to have a good time too and watch all the other people. But I literally talked to people at that event in the pits. There was a huge mud bog that would show up every year, and guys were running trucks and buggies and quads and 3-wheelers through it. And we'd walk over and talk to them, and they didn't even know there was a race that weekend. They thought it was just a party weekend.
Wow, that's crazy that they came to that spot to have a great time and did not even know that it was one of the most iconic races held in the Americas.
Yep. I talked to a few people that just, I remember talking to a guy coming in. They had a U-Haul truck, and he had a lifted Chevy pickup on tiny tires on a trailer. And they were asking where they could park. And we were standing there at our pits, and I told him, I don't know, would you go that way? I said, what are you here for? And he said, well, we just came for the mud bog. And he said, we have the big tires in the U-Haul. We're going to put the big tires on and come out and play in the mud. And he goes, well, what are you doing here? I said, well, we're here for the race. And he's looking at me, what race? And I'm like, well, there's 400 quad race guys here just to race tomorrow. It was interesting.
That's pretty crazy. I got to go back with Bob Sloan one year, and I was pretty amazed. It was crazy. It was so crazy.
The town definitely welcomed us. And I remember the last year, I think we were there, they ended up being like a whole traveling fair showed up with, you know, rides and games and, you know, food vendors. And it was like, you know, it was like a, you know, a fair. And it was getting to be a big deal.
It was a bummer they ever shut it down.
It's a shame. It was a good event, and it was a good moneymaker for the town, and people had a great time, and it was good for the series because we got a lot of people out there, and it got a lot of coverage.
Did the sand fleas or the mud fleas help you guys on at every level, just like they did? You know, you hear the stories from there were guys that were running in the 250 class, you know, how the mud fleas would help them. Was it the same for you guys on the 4-strokes?
Oh, absolutely. They didn't care who you were. They just wanted to watch you get stuck and help pull you out. You had to be real careful with those guys. I mean, you'd show up in a mud hole and they'd point one way or the other way and say, this is the way you want to go. You go down there and you'd sink right up to the front bumper, and then they just come over and pull you out. That's what they wanted to do. They didn't care who you were.
That is totally crazy that they all they wanted to do was help you.
Yep. We made sure we learned and made sure that we'd stop. And like, if they start all pointing in one spot, we wait for someone else to go first. Because I didn't, you know, at one point we were running up, you know, towards the front, you know, and we didn't want to be one of the regular guys getting stuck deep in a mud hole. So there was a few times I would just wait a couple seconds and look to see where everybody else went. And because if they were telling you to go there, it might not be a good place.
Well, if they're going to get you out, how long would it take them to get you out? Just a couple minutes?
Maybe, but you know, we're racers. We don't want to be sitting around waiting to get dug out of a hole.
That's true. That's very true. Were there options for you guys for shocks and A-arms like there are today?
No, not that early in the 250S, at least. I remember anybody making A-arms when I was running. Swing arms, I think there was a few that guys could run for TT and maybe motocross, but my first modified swing arm was a stock swing arm that Mickey Dunlop actually lengthened 2 inches for us. And we ran a stock rear shock, and WP came out with a set of front shocks for 250X I bought from White Brothers. I remember buying them. And we actually used the stock springs off our stock shocks. They just came as just a shock without a spring. And that was the first set of front shocks I ever was able to get a hold of for a 250X. Very, very limited in options.
Yeah, you look at the stuff that you can run today, you know, Elka, Axis, Fox, you know, and you have 10 different sets of A-arms that you can run. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, we didn't have those options. We didn't have options for a lot of stuff. We had to make a lot of our parts, a lot of stuff we experimented with. If you wanted to widen the front end, a lot of times we'd swap the front rims around, redrill a valve stem for the outside, plug the inside so we could get a wider front wheel until we were able to pick up some, set of, then there'd be Mitchell. They converted to Douglas not too long after that, maybe a set of offsets. But even in cross country, I like to run stock wheels a lot because they were a lot stronger than running an aftermarket wheel.
Right, right. Until you get into the bead lines, things like that.
Yeah, I ran stock wheels for a while in the front because I could go to motocross track. Guys were selling them left and right for a couple bucks because they all ran, you know, the Douglas or ITP. So we would just pick up all the stock wheels we could cheap, and then we could run them, and that heavy roll bead held up well to the rocks. And we ran the Pro Comp tires, and Teddy Trey taught me run a lot of air in them. It's going to be a rough ride, but your tire won't go flat. It won't buckle and cut on a rock as fast. So that's what we did.
Were you racing when the 6-ply tires came out?
No. Right around the 92, 93, we were working with ITP some on the 4-ply hole shots. Bobby Klein had a set of the Team Honda 6-ply Pro Comps, and he had finally wore a set out, and we cut a set in half and gave it to ITP so they could see how Otsu was building their tire compounds.
Well, that's not really, I guess that's how it's done, right?
That was how it was done then.
What was your exhaust pipe of choice?
I ran one of Mickey Dunlap's 4-stroke Tex pipes almost the whole time. I had a couple super traps, but I did like the 4-stroke Tex pipe. Worked well. He ran a really, really short header that I liked compared to the DG or the Cobras. Ran a real long header, and I liked the way that pipe worked.
Nice, nice. So was Mickey the guy that you reached out to for engine mods too?
I did use Mickey for a few years, yes. We built a lot of motors back then. A lot of the 4-stroke guys were going. That was when he opened up in Maryland. He left Power Roll and came down to Cumberland, which is about 3 hours from our house. So we could even run to his shop and drop off motors or have him help us work on the bikes. There a few times I called him in the middle of the night needing parts, you know, type things, and we'd run down to get them. And I used Mickey for a while, and then my last motor was a TC motor Tom Carlson had built, but I had bought that whole bike used off of a friend of mine. So I was running that motor probably the last year or so.
And what machine was that?
250X.
So once you switched from that 200X to the 250X, is that all you raced was a 250X?
mainly, yes. I ran a borrowed 250R for a TT race here and there. Bromley Suzuki gave me a quad racer to run for one race to see if I like going to a two-stroke. And I ran a Yamaha 225 DX during the 200X years when I had my 200X was down one race. I parked my dad's Yamaha, raced that in a local GNCC.
What was the drawback to the two-stroke?
I was a four-stroke guy, and I just still like the four-strokes. You know, I didn't have a problem with the two-stroke, but I was more comfortable on the four-strokes.
What I'm getting at is suspension, power delivery.
Some of the two-strokes definitely had a better suspension. The 250X was, I liked it better because it was shorter and narrow, more narrow. A lot of guys did switch over to the R's. Even with the R's are running the 350X or 250X motor in the R frame. But I was comfortable on my 250X. And then some of it was probably a little bit of budget also to go out and buy another bike to start over.
Right. That always makes a difference when you have to freaking write that check, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a lot going on back then. I was in art school and I was working and, you know, and other hobbies, and money was, you know, was what it was. But, you know, we didn't always have the money to run out and buy another bike when we needed to. But we did have to replace a 250X. I think I had three of them over the years just because we wear the frames out. They would just get too metal fatigued and start cracking and breaking, to the point where it was time to quit patching them and just pick up another frame and start over.
And that was generally not going down to the dealership and buying a new bike. It was getting another frame and swapping parts over.
Pretty much, or if we could find a whole bike at a reasonable price. I bought one of mine off of Mickey. He had an old roller sitting down there one time, and we were there, and he just said, "Hey, I got one sitting out back," and threw me a number, and I'm like, yeah, that'll work. And it had like a plus six axle on it at the time. And I think it said a great on Pro 9 Nerf bars. And you know, we just swapped the axle back out, put my motor in it, and we had a newer frame. We had modified the frames a good bit to hold up, but they still in time became, you know, worn out.
How many of the guys that you got to spend time with at the races and work with are in the industry today doing things?
Not many, I don't think. Some of the guys are still around. I mean, Mickey's still around. I still talk to him here and there. Bobby's still around, you know, doing stuff. But a lot of the guys that ran up front on the big two strokes, I don't know if many of them are still actively in, you know, in the industry.
How much of an effect, because you're a businessman, I'm assuming, basically because you got your shirt on, how much of that developmental aspect of racing the early years of the GNCC has affected your business life today?
Well, since my business is in the ATV and motorcycle industry, it helps because I have an understanding of what happened then and what people want to do now. You understand where people are going with their budgets. You understand what people are looking for and what, how it's expected to perform, the product that we would put out.
What I was, I like that answer, but you know, you guys were developing the industry that you see today, and you were coming up with concepts that some of the concepts you guys came up with then are still in play now. Mm-hmm. That's what I was kind of getting at with the business line. You know, did that help you creatively in what you do today?
Maybe some, because we had to be creative. We had to be innovative. We had to look at what needs to be done and what our customer base would be looking for. And And it helped also, you know, to make some contacts in the industry that are still in the industry.
That's what I was looking for right there. Talk to me a little bit about art school. When you were younger and you're going through art school, was it more like a trade school or was it like a college setup?
It was more of a college setup. We had classes and projects and, you know, evening classes, and we had a campus. You know, it was more like a college. I didn't stay there. It was a local college, so I could still stay at home and commute. So basically when I left there, I came home, worked in the garage, getting ready to go racing.
Was that a contrast for the people that you went to school with, or were a lot of them in the racing industry as well?
No one there was into it or really involved in it at all or understood it. You know, they were more of what you consider art school students, and they had no interest in motorsports whatsoever, whether it was drag racing or NASCAR or, you know, or off-road racing. It was on Mondays, like, how'd you do this weekend? We know you were out racing, you know, conversation.
Sheltered college students.
Yeah. That, and I had a few instructors who told me I couldn't make a living dealing with motorcycle stuff all the time. I had to start branching out and do other stuff, especially when it came to doing my artwork and my design.
And do you still contact with any of those teachers?
No, unfortunately, I don't.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to prove them wrong, right?
Yeah, I'd like to, but yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about what you do.
We're the owner operators of Blue Line Graphics. Our business is making reproduction decals for vintage three-wheelers, dirt bikes, and ATVs for restoration. And people just want to fix up their bikes.
When you say motorcycles and ATVs, what models are you most prevalently making product for right now?
Three-wheelers more than anything. We are doing vintage quads and Z50s, CT70s. One of our biggest sellers is 84 and 85 Big Red. We sell decals every day for them.
And that's a reconstruction of a OEM Honda setup decals?
Yes, majority of it is. We do some custom work and custom colors, or, you know, maybe an inch in size change. Someone has a, you know, an 86 250R and they want the decals to look OEM, but say, you know, 265 on them. We can do that. But a majority of it is for OEM replacement.
And how did you get into that?
By accident.
Okay. Give me a little bit more, brother.
All right. We started out after art school. I worked in printing industry, a couple different print shops running printing presses. Got into the last shop I was at, and I moved up into their art department, and I was messing around because I had an art school background. So they moved me off a press and I was running in there. And I said to my wife one day, I'm going to order this little vinyl cutter. So I want to make some decals for my stuff in the garage and a couple of the three-wheelers we have, because I bought some stuff off the internet, wasn't happy with it. So I think I can make my own. And once I bought a vinyl machine, everybody I knew that owned a garage, a body shop, a plumber was like, can you make me decals for my van? Can you make me this? Can you make me that? And we started a side business making decals as a sign shop. That's what the wife and I started out with. We'd work all day, come home, and then work in the evenings. And it wasn't too long to we picked up a small printer. And I'd say, well, I could do a couple, you know, racing decals because fit my bikes. And I still had all my old decals left over from my sponsors. So I copied a couple for my 200X and, you know, and a 350X I would ride, and put a few on eBay and a few on, you know, some of the forums. And next thing you know, people start asking for this and asking for that. And we had a collection of original stuff here, parts, bikes, decals, and friends started sending me gas tanks and fenders so I could copy the decals. And next thing you know, we were doing more of that than anything else. So bought some more equipment, and we kind of got out of the regular plumbing van decals and printing all the other stuff and started concentrating more on ATV stuff. And that's what we do now. That's what I do now full time.
So the restoration business is really good for you.
It is. I mean, COVID really pushed it along. A lot of people drug out some old projects. But a lot of guys were back into racing three-wheelers and fixing them up also before that.
Yeah, there was a big market for it. But yeah, you're right. COVID ignited a completely new industry with a completely new desire for some of your OEM stuff and then some of your performance aftermarket stuff.
Yes. Yes, it was. I was afraid it was going to go the other way, and we're all very fortunate it didn't. I had just gone out on my own about 2 months before COVID started shutting everything down. We weren't sure we were going to survive in the AO. We thought everybody would quit buying stuff, but it didn't happen.
How much of a delay was there for you? You know, because I remember what I went through, you know, the announcements and all that stuff. They did it on my grandson's birthday. Can you believe that? I'll never forget it. But they announce it. I looked at my brother and I said, I'm not going home. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. But let's keep working. And because, you know, we had work. We were still busy.
Right.
And the phone slowed down for, I think, 2, maybe 3 days, if that at all. And then I couldn't answer the phone fast enough or ship enough packages.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably about like that. We had just went out full time. I was shop that I worked for had sold, and the company that bought it didn't want the printing industry. They just wanted the buildings and the property. So we were out on our own just for a few months, and we really started pushing advertising and putting some new product out. I went back to another print shop for like 3 months who made me a good enough offer to go back, and it didn't work out well there. It was Valentine's Day. They came in, gave us an hour to clean out our desks and go home. And I called the wife. I said, well, we're back to full time and let's just go. And that was a month before COVID. So we were starting to ramp up. And then when COVID hit, like I said, maybe about a week or two, it's kind of everybody took it easy. And I was trying to make sure I could still get supplies. And then it just, the doors opened up and it just hasn't stopped.
That's great. So it blossomed your business into a full line. Do you have any competitors really in the restoration decal business?
There's some other people out there that do stuff. I want to say it this way. We try really hard to offer a good product, and a lot of restoration shops buy from us specifically, and because we offer a product that's comparable to OEM, looks good, and it's helped us move up and take a good chunk of that business away from maybe some of the other people or the guys that just had stuff on eBay and it was close enough. We strive to get as close as we can to original because we work from original products. I couldn't tell you how many NOS decals here. And used fenders and rusty gas tanks and complete ATV that we bought just to copy the decals for.
Have any of the other manufacturers contacted you about making those decals?
No, we haven't had much contact.
They don't care.
As far as I know, we haven't had any problems.
Right. Well, I'm assuming since they don't make them, why would they care that you make them?
Being that we kind of do more of the restoration side of things and not a brand new product or something different using their logos, I don't think most companies have any problems with it. And I've had a few companies that have no problem with it, and I've talked to them directly, and they said, yes, you have all the, you know, do whatever you want with our logo. You know, it's fine. We don't care. You know, just as long as it's getting out there and the guys can still use it, that's all they care about. Because they don't want to deal with making up a couple and just trying to sell a decal here or there when they have other things to do.
Yeah, it's very difficult to keep up with certain portions of the business when you're working constantly, you know, and that's, you know, you're in the shop working and somebody wants you to provide a, you know, they sent you an envelope and they want some decals. Well, yeah, okay, I get it. I'll get to it, but that's not my main priority. I have, you know, machines to put together, engines to work on. So, you know, that's my woes. I'm assuming you have your own style.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's the same way. We want to get to what we're doing. And then people ask for other stuff or really crazy custom things, or, you know, can we, you know, wrap, you know, their trailer or something like that. And it's just like, that's not what we do. We're really focusing on trying to get that small decal orders out there for everybody. And some of them are very large orders, but still filling that little void. And then from there, it's trying to make new product to get out there, because I have a lot of people always asking for a model that we don't have, and we got to find it, or if we have it in an inventory, let's get it made and, you know, available to the public. Because we have boxes and boxes of original decals that we're just waiting for someone to say, hey, I really want, you know, this one. And I'll look in our inventory and go, yes, we have it. Give me a week. We'll make them up and get them out to you.
How did you come up with some of the models? Did you just go hunt things down to get those decals, or did you order some of that stuff? How did it work?
Some of both. Some I had in my collection. Some I had friends who had it in their collection. I search eBay every day. I search Partzilla, CMS, you know, on a regular basis, looking for original decals. We go to swap meets looking for original decals. Sometimes I'm the guy at the swap meet walking around buying rusty gas tanks and broken fenders. You know, they have a decal on it and it's an original one. Then, you know, I'll pick it up, bring it home. I got a whole storage unit full of rusted fenders and rusted tanks that someone goes, hey, I need 88.
You broke up. Say that again?
I'll go, well, hold on, let me go check my inventory. We just have a little bit of an inventory that we'd like to get through all of it someday, but that's going to be so we have a little bit of inventory, but we'd like to get it all done someday, but it's going to take a while to get everything done.
That's pretty cool. Is the growth of the decal restoration business keep getting larger word of mouth, or do you do a lot of advertising?
I believe more word of mouth than anything. I don't do a lot of advertising. We do go to swap meets, and we set up as vendors and hand out cards and flyers, and we sell decals there, of course, and people then find out about us. But we do a lot with them on Facebook and some of the forums, and some of it's just word of mouth. Someone, you know, email and go, hey, I got your name from so-and-so, and I'm looking for this. And I've done a lot of decals, non-ATV related, but just stuff, you know, that people are looking for, cars, boats, but mainly ATVs or older dirt bikes, or, you know, older street bikes that they can't find anything for. They'll reach out to us and say, you know, hey, can you do this? And if you can send me an example or the original part, sure, we'll do it.
So if I got a TT500, you know, and I have a gas tank with the original decal on there, I can send you that tank and you're going to duplicate those decals for me and then send me my decals and my tank back.
Yes, that's how it works.
That's freaking, that's awesome that you have. I just better get all the gas out of it before I ship it, right?
Yeah, it helps.
No smoking allowed on this job. Wow, that's pretty awesome. And is your street market growing? Because I know that that's a huge market all in its own for restoration.
We're not real heavy in street right now. We're working more of the dirt bike and definitely three-wheeler and quad. I'd like to do all the ATVs up to around 2,000 is what I like to have my catalog at. And it depends on what it is. I've had people mail me the entire set of fenders off of an ATV. Gas tank, fender, front, rear fender, everything, rear shock, so we can do the shock warnings, just mail everything up. We'll make it all up, mail it back, and then from there on in, we have it in our catalog that we can make more. Or if it's you had the black version and you want a blue version, we can swap out colors and then go from there.
That's freaking pretty cool that you do that, you know? And you didn't even start off to be that guy.
No, we didn't. We said we started off as a sign shop and actually printing t-shirts and making signs, and that's what we wanted to do. And it's just my past. I was still an ATV guy, and my wife's into it too. She worked at Kawasaki dealership for 20 years in the parts department, so she understood the whole thing. And when people come up to us and go, "Hey, I got a 1985 KLT, can you do something for it? You probably never heard of one." I'm like, "Yeah, we heard of one. Yeah, we might even have one. Let's see what we can do to help you out." And then now we have a lot of Kawasaki decals. I have a lot of friends that let us come in through their collections also, and come in with tracing paper, scanners, measuring tapes, cameras, and just document everything we could, so that we could come back and make decals here off of their machines. Like, if we couldn't take the whole bike home, but we could come in and document, placement and size and color, and go from there.
Is there special tooling that you need to take those measurements and those pictures with? Or if I'm asking the wrong question, correct me.
No, you're right. No, I wouldn't say there's anything real special. I do have some small handheld scanners that we use, and we'll tape tracing paper onto a gas tank and come in with a fine pencil and draw the complete outline of the decal. And from there, taking a lot of pictures. iPhones have improved dramatically over the years. That they actually take a good picture now, and we'll take
the got a
decal.
Wi-Fi.
We'll take pictures of the decal with rollers in it, tape measures, and into our program, and we'll redraw it from there. I prefer to have the original in my hands, but it doesn't always work out that way. So we do what we can with what we have to work with.
That's awesome stuff. How far back do you go in the three-wheeler era? Do you go all the way back to the US 90?
Yes. We have most of the US 90. We have all the ATC 70, the 250Rs, 350X, 200X, most of the Honda three-wheeler stuff. We have pretty much buttoned up, maybe a few small pieces we're looking for. Working on the Kawasaki's right now. I got a fair amount of KLT stuff, working on some more. Just had a gentleman send in a whole bunch of tracings off of his KLT 250. So we'll be able to offer that year. I believe it's 82 or 83. I had to double check. Working on some Suzuki stuff. We got most of the big hitters done already. The Takatis, the 250Rs, 350Xs, Big Reds, 250SX, another very popular model. We have those done, and then we're starting with the quads. We got the 250Rs, the 86 through an 89. Working on 400EX and 450R stuff now. 300EX, I got a couple of years of that done. A couple more we're working on. I have a stack of NOS 300EX decals here we're going to start working on to try to get those out there. And we're doing a lot of Z50s. I went on a binge and bought every year Z50 gas tank I could find on eBay so I could do Z50 decals.
That's a commitment. I mean, you're just into it, and it's amazing that the decal market is that big.
Yeah, a lot of people say that.
Well, I guess,
but it is.
Well, I guess when it's super important when you get down to a restoration and you want it as close to factory as it could possibly be. That matters.
It does. And I understand that and respect that for the guys restoring it. I restored a few bikes. That little warning decal that was on the shock, it told you not to take it apart because it was under, you know, high pressure nitrogen. You want that little decal that went on top of the parking brake, you know, lever on your handlebar, because that's the way it looked like from the factory. You know, and we offer all those little decals. We offer the little year decal on the frame that has the month your bike was built. You can pick that off our website, what month you want. So you can restore it back to looking, that chrome decal, looking as close as we can to what it was original. Because some of these bikes now are starting to be valuable. 250R prices in 86, 87 Takati prices are crazy right now. So, you know, you want to spend this much money to restore it. You know, what's a couple more bucks to make the decals look right?
Exactly. I agree. I totally agree. That's freaking awesome. Bruce, I want to thank you so much. I had no idea that the market that you're in was as big as it is.
It is. And it's fun though, and it keeps me in the ATV industry, and it gets me to talk to people, you know, about my days when I used to race, because every now and then I run into a guy that we start talking and we realize we were probably on the track at the same time. You know, we just didn't know each other then. But they're restoring their old race bike and they need the old Mitchell wheel decals, or they need, you know, an old Pro Design kill switch decal, you know, and because they want their old race bike to look like it did in 1988. You know, and we can offer that to them because they still have their bike. Like, or they went and bought another one and they're reliving their youth again. It's great. We love it.
That's so cool. That's pretty awesome stuff, young man. I want to thank you so much for taking some time.
The team here at ATV Talk would love your feedback. Please email us at hello@atvtalkpodcast.com. San Diego's Body Evolution and Wellness Center. With over 17 years experience, Dr. Heidi looking out after all your chiropractic needs, and Coach PJ looking out after all your fitness needs. Visit our website, www.bodyevolution.org, or call for an appointment, 619-987-8875.
If you're in need of a consultation for your current racing program, a custom ATV, or an industry guest speaker, I have the company for you. Duncan Technologies International Inc. offers host, MC, and guest speaking services at events, builds custom ATVs for recreational riding or racing around the world, and they offer consulting services for professional teams or individual racers. Send inquiries to DuncanTechInternational@gmail.com or call 619-716-1532 for more information. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, don't forget to share us with your family and friends. The podcast is available on all streaming platforms, and you can find us on social media as ATV Talk Podcast. We're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Rumble, and Twitter